You are listening to Dutch National Opera's introductory podcast to Giuseppe Verdi's opera La Traviata, which is scheduled to be performed from December 4th to December 26th, 2021. My name is Laura Roling. I'm a dramaturg with Dutch National Opera, and in this podcast I will be sitting down with Tatjana Gorbacha, who directs the production. But before I do so, I want to briefly set the scene a little, especially for those of you unfamiliar with the opera. When in 1853 La Traviata premiered, Italian composer Giuseppe Verdi had become quite an established name, both nationally in Italy, as well as internationally all around Europe. And for his newest opera, he wanted to bring a contemporary story to the operatic stage. He found the perfect source material in the recently published novel and theatre play, La Dame aux Camélias, by French writer Alexandre Dumas-Fils, who had in turn drawn from real life for his novel and had modelled his title character after the historical figure of Marie Duplessis, or Alphonsine Plessis as she was born. And she was a courtesan and an absolute cult figure in Parisian society. And she died in 1847 of tuberculosis at the very tender age of 23. So when Verdi's opera premiered in 1853, the historical figure on which the opera was indirectly based had been dead for just 6 years. An opera really does not get more contemporary than that. So, Giuseppe Verdi introduces us to Violetta Valery, the most desirable courtesan in Paris. She throws the hottest parties in town, and everyone is willing to spend lots of money for just a piece of her. Not so country guy Alfredo Germont. What he has to offer her is something much more immaterial. It's love, pure and simple, almost naive. At first, Violetta is skeptical, but faced with the fact that she's dying, that she only has a brief time left on Earth, she decides to choose love, and she takes the plunge. Together with Alfredo, she moves to the country, and the two live quite happily, but not ever after. Georges Germont, Alfredo's father, shows up at Violetta's doorstep one day, and tells her that her relationship with Alfredo is damaging his daughter's chances of a respectable marriage. And he pleads with her to break off the relationship with Alfredo. Touched especially by the thought of saving this younger daughter, Violetta decides to break off the relationship, however painful it is for her. She returns to Paris, but cannot quite pick up where she left off. And with death on her heels, this makes for a very tragic final act in which we see Violetta Valery on her deathbed. Directing our production of this opera here in Amsterdam is Tatjana Gorbacha, and I have her with me right now. Hi, Tatjana.
Hello, so good to be here with you.
And we're very happy to have you here directing this production and bringing your take on the story. Let's start with the main character, Violetta Valery. In your production, who is she and what is the world she inhabits like?
I was from the very beginning really fascinated by this character. I think it's in some points really different than other, not only Verdi characters, but opera characters. First of all, she's really all the time on stage. So we see the entire story also through her eyes. And I think what makes her so special is that in these times where the opera takes place, she's a bit like a self-made woman. She does not start like a young innocent girl, but when we meet her, she's already top of the society. She has money, she can decide about her life, and even if she's a courtesan, I mean, a courtesan also in these times was kind of a respected person, more like an it girl. It's not the same like a prostitute, because she could choose which man to have. She She was the meeting point in Paris. And anyway, from the very beginning, she sees her situation really clearly. Already in the first act, she's talking about Paris as the crowded desert.
So, populoso deserto.
Yeah, so she knows and she feels that the society that surrounds her and the people who visit her party, that it's an empty world. It's all about surfaces and the facade behind which you can see the true face of the society. And I think from the very beginning, she sees that this entire society is based on money and that there's an inner emptiness. I think that makes her interesting because it tells us that she's an intelligent, thinking woman, which is special in these times, I think. And also she discovers that her disease, her illness, can give her freedom, which is also kind of surprising because you would expect a character to suffer when she learns she's ill, but because she doesn't.
And in what sense does it give her freedom?
Yeah, it gives her freedom because suddenly she knows, okay, I have a certain amount of time still remaining. I have money, so I can choose what to do. Do I want to go on like I did the last few years forever? Or do I decide to change, to take all my money? And this is what she does. And also this is special, that she's turning the entire money cycle upside down.
Because instead of her just earning money, she's now
spending it.
Providing yeah, also in the second act.
Yes, she's selling all her stuff. She's selling her horses, her carriage, her apartment, all her furniture to have this life with Alfredo. And it's nice to see that in the second act, Alfredo did not know that. He just learns it. And it's for him really embarrassing that it's a woman earning money for him. So
providing
for him, that's really something that would never happen in these days. It's really a scandal, I think. And it's good how Verdi shows that this is the point where the entire society does not agree with her. And somehow she has to be punished then for this decision, especially for despiting the money.
And how do you see Alfredo, her love interest?
I love this character because in Alfredo you can find all the heroes of Balzac novels, of Emile Zola novels, also of some Russian novels like Lermontov, Väter und Söhne. He's very young when he comes from the countryside. He's doing literature, so he's an artist. Really quite innocent and very dreamy. And he comes to Paris and dreams to not only to win Violetta's love, but also to have a career as an artist. So he needs to get into this society somehow. And his best friend Gastone, or so-called best friend, we will find out if he's really a best friend or not. But
one who introduces him to the party.
Exactly. Gastone was inviting him to get to this party, to Violetta's place. And there he needs to start his career.
His also networking most of...
And unexpected things will happen there. So it's not that easy that he thought it would be.
But is he is an artist, so a little bit naive, a little bit dreamy. He dreams of love. Of
also eager, I think.
But how great is this love of his?
That's a good question. I think he believes really in what he says. And he's a very honest character in a way. But at the same time, like in all the Verdi operas, it's always society who puts pressure onto the main characters. And in this case, it's not only society, but it's especially Alfredo's family.
Embodied by his father, Giorgio.
Embodied by his father. And in this production, we will see a bit more of Alfredo's family also. And we will understand maybe a bit better what exactly is the pressure that is... How do you say
that
his father puts on him?
Yeah, because Giorgio Germont enters in the second act to tell Violetta, you have to leave my son because it's causing shame on our family and it's damaging my daughter.
Yeah, yeah.
You are actually bringing the family visibly on stage.
Yeah, when I saw Traviata as a little girl, I always wondered why Violetta is not fighting more for her love or the real life she discovers
for
in the
herself.
Second act and for herself. And I really needed to read the words properly to get the message that there's another girl with whom she might also identify in some moments, the sister of Alfredo. And when you think about these times, what would happen to a girl that cannot marry the proposed fiancé because there is a courtesan in the family and the scandal going on? So what would happen to her in these times? She would not have the possibility to work on her own. And if the family were not rich enough, then maybe she would end as a courtesan as well. So,
or I mean, a courtesan is actually
worse,
at the top of the prostitution pyramid.
Yeah.
I mean, the courtesan has a certain amount of freedom and luxury and certainty, but everyone below the courtesan has, well, let's just say it, a very miserable life.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
So is that for you also the key to Violetta's decision?
Definitely, definitely. It is Johann Wolfgang von Goethe who said it's very easy to turn a gardener into a whore, but doing it vice versa, turning a whore into a gardener takes or art or character. And I think in this case, we have both.
Yeah.
We have Verdi's beautiful music, but we also have the character of Violetta who sacrifices for this young girl. And she really becomes a martyr, and especially in this production, because she's what she does is always for a higher purpose, which is great, I think.
And the chorus, obviously in the opera, there are two party scenes where they're written into the music and part of the action. But you're not just bringing them on stage in the party scenes. You're bringing them on stage much more, and also in scenes where they don't have to sing anything. Why is that?
Yeah, because I like this contrast between the society of Paris, the demi-monde. And by the way, demi-monde is a word that was invented by Alexandre Dumas. So the
writer of La Dame aux Camélias, the novel that...
Yeah. Which means it's a world that is also a bit, has its dark sides. It's not only elegant and arrogant, but it's also...
Nasty and dirty.
Nasty and contains a lot of secrets and things that are not spoken about in an open manner. And I really wanted to show the contrast between this society of the city and the countryside life and the life that Violetta wants to have, but her background and this pressure that is made from how society looks at our main characters.
And but they're also doing very quite explicit things. And they're all sort of their individual characters.
Mm.
Why did you decide to have the chorus actually quite in your face, to be quite intense?
Well, first of all, I love working with the chorus. And I especially love working with the chorus here in Amsterdam, because I think they are so great and have such a great energy, and they really give everything on stage. I think that Verdi in general is really a very political composer. He always used all the sujets he used for his operas to tell something about his times.
Even when it's set in the Middle Ages or wherever.
I mean, think of Rigoletto. Also there you have the court around the Duca, and you can see how spoiled people are. So I think Verdi always had to go this diplomatic way of covering a bit things, but he was very interested in telling something about his world. And I believe that this is the reason why we still do theater and opera, because theater is a place where we can share our thoughts and our utopias, but also our fears or the way we look to society. So I think that this opera is really very close to us and our times. It's very modern. also in the sense that this society that Verdi shows, it's all based on money.
And we still are.
And we still are, and maybe even more. And it's so superficial, and it's very difficult to find your own way in this world.
Yeah, or to escape from it, the scourge of money or the need of money.
And in the end, I believe Violetta is dying more from social coldness than from her disease.
Do you see her disease as I mean, obviously it's tuberculosis in the opera. But the interesting thing is that Verdi himself didn't want the singer to cough.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the effects don't have to be there. Is that for you also?
Yeah, I believe that the disease should, for me, should be shown only in the beginning, because it's only the door that opens to show her another way, another possibility of living. And then the disease does not really matter anymore, because the story she goes through is so much stronger and is much more killing her than everything else.
And moving to how you work as a director, you work with music. That's your basic material. How do you start working on an opera like Traviata? Obviously, the score is your starting point.
Yeah.
Do you do a close reading, or how do you...
Yes, of course. I mean, there are different approaches to different operas. I must say that every opera finds its own way. But in general, the music for me is really most important. So I often sit with the score at the piano, playing it. And of course, I listen to a lot of different recordings also, because I like also to see different interpretations. And I try also to read a lot that is not only really connected only to Alexandre Dumas or Verdi or these times, but also a bit things that are maybe a bit further away. And another really important source of inspiration for me is art. Maybe also because my husband is an artist. So,
because you were inspired particularly by a Marina Abramović performance.
Yes, Marina Abramović was very important for me for this production, but also an artist like Frida Kahlo, for example, or also sometimes also photographers like Kai-Uwe Gundlach, who's just portraying our society. But Marina Abramović was really very important, and especially with a performance she did in 1974 in Naples.
Rhythm Zero,
where she exposed herself to the audience with, I think, 74 objects.
Yeah.
And the audience was invited to do everything they wanted with her and those objects. And the entire performance took 6 hours. It started somehow
friendly, nice.
And it's after 3 hours, it became more and more dangerous. So after 3 hours, I think somebody started to cut her clothes with razor blades. After 4 hours, somebody hurt her skin with those razor blades. And the climax was reached when somebody loaded a gun that was among these objects, and laid her finger onto the trigger, and the gun was pointing onto her neck, and she had written on her forehead "end." There are some pictures you can find in the net, so it's really extreme.
It's quite disturbing.
Yeah, and then there was a fight breaking out in the audience, but the performance went on, and Marina Abramović herself spoke in an interview about this performance, and she said that it struck her in a very strange way that when the performance was done and she went into the audience, everybody escaped from her.
Yeah, because the performance had ended and she was no longer simply an object.
Yeah, yeah.
To do with what you like.
Yeah. And she could act then and react, and that was frightening for the people. And I think that shows in a very good way how we work as human beings and society works, and how we try to cover our thinking or our emotions in some moments, or how cruel it can get if you feel freed in these aspects.
And if you do not see another person as as a human anymore, or as an object rather than a human.
Yeah.
Because that's also when in the Flora scene, the Flora's party, when Violetta returns to Paris in your production, things really get quite cruel.
Yeah, I always thought that society looks at her like, she was the it girl, the perfect little doll, and now the doll dares to have her own thoughts. And this is something that's absolutely not allowed. She showed clearly that she despises everybody, even with their money. And so this is something that cannot be suffered.
She stepped out of the system and now she's sort of stepping in and the system is saying, well,
yeah,
no.
Yeah. Also that she was spending her money on living with a man means that never again she will be paid for what she offers. So everybody can have her now without money.
That makes it very painful.
Yeah, it is. It is a cruel scene.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, in this Flora scene, usually you have always the female gypsies and the matadores.
Yeah, and the acting and the playfulness.
Horror scenes, but you can ask yourself, why are there female gypsies and matadores? I mean, what is it about? Is it only decoration for a party, or what is the sense of those?
And it starts out very, very happily, like we're the gypsy girls and then the matadors. And then there's also this subtext of violence already entering.
And also because I thought this society also, they are always searching for the next kick, where to get the next sensation. And of course, the kick of yesterday cannot be the kick of tomorrow. It has to be stronger and stronger and stronger. It's like a drug. And I think that the sensation the society is searching for does not only lie in beauty, but also in destruction and in something that can touch them emotionally.
Yeah, even if that emotion is horror or
or
sadism or whatever.
I mean, what is this crowded desert? It's a very strong picture that is invented there when we talk about the crowded desert Paris. What is a crowded desert? I imagine it's people that are without souls, like zombies.
Some sort of populated emptiness.
Yeah.
So it's
the emptiness that is in the hearts of society.
If we return to the music, is there a scene that for you is your favorite?
Oh, the entire opera. I mean, this music, this opera is unique. Really unique. I love all the Verdi operas, and but I think there's no opera like Traviata. It's the best sold opera, I think, of all times, and that's not just by chance. It's every aria or every ensemble that pops up is like, oh, that's so beautiful.
And dramatically strong.
And dramatically strong and, and so true and eternal.
But still, if you had to pick one bit of it that we can let the audience listen to right now in this podcast.
Maybe it's the moment when Violetta knows she has to leave Alfredo. And he does not understand yet what's going on. And she has like one last loving scene with him.
The Amami Alfredo.
Amami Alfredo. I mean, that's heartbreaking.
That is absolutely heartbreaking.
E non attendo amela in vedere
mi credo di sorprendere lasciami allontanare tu la colpa a mia destra cercherò di risolvere
piangi
di lacrime a me accanto
and anything else? Is there an aria or a moment by Violetta or a duet with...
I mean, all the Georges Germont arias are beautiful, especially the moment when... There is a moment where Georges Germont, Alfredo's father... I mean, this is also a character, like all Verdi characters, there's no black and white in Verdi operas. He has lots of different sides. On one hand, you can understand that he's fighting for his family and that he loves his family really very much and that he tries to protect his daughter, but also his son. He does not really know what kind of life Alfredo is living in Paris. On the other hand, we can feel that there's also something wrong about this family first and all these traditions that the family is stuck in. And also this, I wanted really to show very clearly that in this ideal family scene, there's also a little lie in it. There's not so much harmony as you think there is when you look at it with the very first sight.
It's not just a happy family.
No,
or the happy
it's not
family.
Just a happy family. There are things going on that are not really nice. And but anyway, Georges Germont has some of the most beautiful music in this play, and I love, for example, when he pities Violetta for what he makes her do, and he sings the Piangi cry. It's a moment that's very close to a moment in the opera Rigoletto. And I think Verdi, for Verdi, the crying was a very important moment in human life, or that you can make your emotions flow, is something that is very releasing for Verdi and very important. And in nearly all Verdi operas, you have this moment where somebody bursts into tears or let them flow, and the emotions are also working. And maybe this is a moment we should listen to.
Andrea Battistoni is conducting the performance run. What does he bring in terms of musical interpretation?
I love what he does. I think he has a very, very fine and sensitive feeling for that music. And I love where he emphasizes some phrases or he just stretches the time a bit. I love the way he uses the breaks. Sometimes there's really silence before the music starts floating again, and I love the inner timing he creates. I think that's really very nice, and also the way he's playing with dynamics.
Yeah, because I also had a conversation with him, and he said to me, I've grown up with this music.
Yeah.
But I have to go back to the score always, not just to perform it as it's written, because that's not interesting, but to discover new details or things for my musical interpretation.
Yeah, because in Verdi operas, I think the score tells you really a lot. It's you can see there's a lot of psychology in this music already the way it's written. And I come back again to another opera of Verdi that I really love, again, Rigoletto, because it's a very good example. Also there we have a party right in the beginning of the opera, and you can see all these little accenti, the little accents on the notes. And when you see them in the score, it looks like little knives that are just stabbing the score.
Yeah.
And already the picture of the music tells it everything. And in Verdi operas, always you have lots of moments with breaks and little coronas.
Yeah.
And which means that you can stretch or the note or the break. And of course, these are moments where as a director, you have also to decide what happens there. Why is it stretched? Why is it like time stops a bit? And it's very, very nice to discover together with the conductor how to use these moments and what to do with them.
Yeah. And what is for you a reason to still perform Traviata today?
Oh, I think this is very obvious. It's self-explaining. It's an opera about us, about our times, about our society, about our way of looking to things, about our relationship with money or higher values. And I think that...
Is it also about
a bit,
the way we treat celebrities? Because...
Yes, also about the way we treat celebrities, but maybe even more... what we do as artists, because I think a bit of Violetta is also in every artist, the idea that money should not be the highest value, but that we should need money to create better values.
Yeah.
This is what Violetta does in the second act. And I think this is also what every artist does. And theater does that. We spend money for the higher value of art.
Yeah, for the higher good
for the higher good,
almost immaterial things.
Yes, for something that in the end is something that defines us as human beings. Because I think without art, we are done.
And how is the atmosphere in the rehearsal room right now?
Oh.
How is it? Who you are working with... Manega Loyan.
She's
one of the
amazing.
She's an upcoming soprano.
She's amazing. I'm completely in love with this cast, really. And not only with the cast, also with the crew, but this cast is just I love them all. I think they are so perfect.
Wonderful. That gives us
Yeah, Manet is really, I mean, she already looks like Alphonsine Duplessis, really beautiful. And then her voice is stunning and her acting is just amazing. Sometimes I watch her and I think, well, but she is Violetta. There's nothing to say.
Yeah, and even just in rehearsals, when she's in her rehearsal costume.
Oh, she's killing me.
Yeah, I can definitely affirm that.
Yeah.
That's also for me very much. Even in rehearsals, she's so impressive already.
Yeah.
So I would like to thank you very much for this conversation.
Thank you, Laura.
And let you get back.
It was a pleasure.
What is important to note is that the audio recordings you've heard in this podcast come from our 2009 run of La Traviata, featuring the Netherlands Philharmonic Orchestra conducted by Paolo Carignani and soprano Marina Poplavskaya as Violetta Valéry, tenor Ismael Jordi as Alfredo Germont, and André Dobar as Giorgio Germont. I promise you that the cast of our upcoming production is at the very least just as riveting, and I really hope to welcome you in our theatre, Dutch National Opera and Ballet. Even though we are not quite sure how the pandemic will exactly affect our run of performances. Thank you very much again for listening, and I really truly hope to see you in the theatre.